So welcome. And so this is a three-week series that is meant to continue the basic instructions that are given during the five-week intro class, which ended last Wednesday. And I'm wondering how many of you have done the intro class that either I or another teacher here has taught? Well, most of you. How many have not? And those of you who have not, have you had some instructions in meditation before, or is this... what kind of instructions are from where? In mindfulness meditation or other forms of meditation?
Instructions.
My instructions, but not in the intro class.
Actually, we did the intro class a long time ago.
Okay. And other people?
Zen.
Sorry?
Zen.
Zen.
Some of my experiences from attending various meetings here. Uh-huh.
Stanford, at the hospital there?
Yeah.
With Mark Abramson?
It was one of their clinical trials, looking at influence of various non-therapeutic approaches on depression.
Oh, was that with was Jonathan Marshall part of that?
Not in my group.
Okay.
There were three groups.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I heard about it. And
this was like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Good.
And
So a little bit the class presupposes some basic introduction to mindfulness practice. So if you have a Zen background, maybe some of this will make a lot of sense without that as a basis. But I think a lot of it also will make sense. And what I'm proposing to do is each of these 3 weeks to focus on a different teaching around meditation that comes from the ancient tradition that, of Buddhism, teachings of the Buddha. And today, the focus will be on what's called the five hindrances. And these are the kind of the five things that tend to hinder meditation quite a bit. And the teachings of the Buddha, a meditator needs to get a really good understanding of these five hindrances so they no longer hinder the natural functioning of the mind, the ability of the mind to pay attention. And so you can go deeper into the present moment, deeper into the practice. The next week, I want to talk about what's called the five faculties, which are five inner kind of psychological factors, qualities of mind that come into play with meditation. They're healthy qualities, and they are important qualities that we all have, and that these are developed in the process of meditation. And developing them and bringing them into balance and tracking them a little bit is also very helpful for learning how to become stabilized and concentrated in the present moment. And then the last week, I'll introduce you to the Four Noble Truths. And this is considered to be one of the most refined, more profound aspects of the meditation practice taught by the Buddha, is when a person can begin using their stability, their concentration, their mindfulness, in order to understand their experience through the vantage point of what's called the Four Noble Truths. And the Four Noble Truths, that vantage point of those four, is what leads to liberation. It's when you can really understand this well, when you kind of not only understand it, but you utilize it in your life. So the five hindrances, the five faculties, and the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha loved lists, lots of lists. In a sense, what these 3 weeks are about is learning how to track your meditation, track what's going on as you meditate. So you know, you're not just kind of a tourist in meditation or just sitting there I'm remembering that there was a teacher that said, a monk, Ajahn Sumedho, who once said, if just sitting was the point, then chickens would be enlightened. And the idea is that to use our intelligence while we sit and be able to kind of have some wise approach to learning how to work with the mind, work with the heart, work with our body, work with the situation as we're engaging in the present moment, as we're developing our concentration and mindfulness. So we require some ability to track what's going on. Somehow like be an objective observer, in a sense, of your psychophysical experience as you're meditating so you can know how to make the appropriate adjustments to keep you going in the present moment. So these are the five things, three different lists of things to be tracked as you practice. For those of you who had never been here before, my name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm the primary teacher here at IMC. We have other teachers who come and teach here also. And IMC operates completely on a freely given basis, donation basis. We just want to make the teachings and practice opportunities available to people as freely as we can. Those of you who would like to support us in doing that, because we have to pay, you know, for our expenses and my livelihood and all that, there is this box by the door, and you can make a donation there if you'd like. There's two places, there's two slots. One is for the center, it's called Operations Dana. Dana means donation. And the other slot is for the teacher, whoever the teacher is. In this case, it would be me. So, let's begin with a short period of meditation. So one of the things you want to track when you're meditating, especially when you first sit down, is the quality of your posture. And many people can spend a good part of their day and their life not paying much attention to the quality of their posture that they're sitting in or standing in. And the couch potatoes are considered to be the prime example of someone who not tracking carefully their posture. There's a posture you can take that enhances alertness, that enhances good inner qualities. I remember once many years ago, I was feeling depressed, and I noticed that I had probably reached the perfection in terms of being a couch potato. My shoulders were down in the, between the back and the seat, I was really kind of just all the way down, and I was feeling kind of sad and lonely and depressed. And my posture was so dramatic, I'd sunk to such depths in my posture. I thought, well, what happens if I sit up straight? And I sit up straight, and to my amazement, my depression went away. Now, it was probably a pretty mild depression. I mean, usually it's not that easy. But sometimes posture can have a big impact on our psychophysical sense of well-being. And so we want to utilize that to help us in meditation and use a kind of posture that supports being alert, so you're kind of more likely to be present and here. So as you take this meditation posture, be a little bit attentive to the quality, and maybe take your spine, especially when you want to be attentive to your spine, have your spine be more energized or alert. An energized spine makes it possible to relax the shoulders and the muscles around the spine in the most optimal way. So taking an upright, alert posture, and then softly closing the eyes. And then beginning by taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. Relaxed breaths, but really full breaths, so you feel your chest, your rib cage expand, your belly expand, like you're stretching or massaging yourself from the inside. And then as you exhale, maybe exhaling a little bit slower and fuller than usual, but as you do so, relaxing, letting go. Breathing in deeply, and then exhaling. While you exhale, relax. And then letting your breath slowly return to normal. And when your breath is more or less normal, then notice what's happening in your body. Letting your attention move through your body freely. Perhaps a global awareness of the body. And if there's any places in your body that's easy to relax or muscles you can soften, you might take this time to loosen up a little bit, those muscles. If they don't relax, maybe kind of a softening around the tension. Especially as you exhale, a little softening around the holding. Feeling your body here, this time, at this place. And in a sense, what we're trying to do in meditation is to harmonize the body and the mind. So the body and the mind are in the same place at the same time. If you're thinking about what happened earlier today, or planning for tomorrow, or fantasizing, then your mind, in a sense, is elsewhere. Other times, other places. And if you're going to harmonize the body and mind, you need to bring the mind into the place where your body is. Into the living experience of being here in a body. It might feel quite wonderful to feel your body or to be present here. It might feel quite mundane and ordinary, or it might feel uncomfortable. It doesn't matter how it is. See if you can be patient and tolerant of how it is, and just begin bringing your mind into your body, feeling the breathing within your body. Feeling, exploring your breathing, getting familiar with what it's like for the body to breathe, as if you've never noticed your breathing before, like it's a new phenomena. And one of the reasons we focus on breathing in meditation is that breathing has a rhythmic quality. It has an alternation, there's change, there's movement. The experience of breathing in is different than the experience of breathing out. There's variation. But the variation is almost predictable. More or less the same. And it's easier for the mind to stay focused if it's being focused on something which is, in a very easy way, is changing or alternating, than if something is really fixed. So see if you can kind of hang in there with the changing experience of breathing in and out. Relaxing with your breathing. mind wanders away from the breathing, then without any commentary or judgments about that, very simply begin again with the breathing, feeling the breath, letting the experience of breathing, the sensations of breathing, move into your awareness, filling your awareness, moving in and out through the awareness, massaging your attention. Letting go of thoughts, engaging yourself with the breathing. Experience of breathing may be pleasant or comforting. It may be mundane or ordinary or dull. It may be uncomfortable. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you trustingly stay present for your breathing. Hang in there with it. Being present for it, maybe in the same way you'd be present for a friend, when you're really going to be present. And then continuing to be with your breathing, tracking your breath, feeling the breathing. When the mind gets taken away from the breath, and you lose track of the breath, don't immediately go back to the breath, but rather notice what it is that took you away. Notice what the concern was. Notice maybe the emotional quality. Was it a movement towards something because there was desire for something? Was there a movement of aversion or not wanting something? Notice what it's like, what it is that took you away from the breath. And then after a while you can come back to the breathing. But then next time you leave the breath or lose the breath, notice what it is that caused that or what happened. Notice what it is that makes it difficult for you to be present, that takes you away from presence. And then in the last minute of the sitting, kind of review a little bit. If there's any common theme or common thing that tend to make it difficult for you to be present, what kind of thoughts made it difficult for you? What kind of feelings? Many years ago, I read a story, or someone told me, I forget which, of someone who went down to some place like Costa Rica. Someone who lived in New York City his whole life, went to the jungles of Costa Rica or Central America, and was given a kind of tour of the jungles with some local who'd grown up there in the jungle. And the guide kind of pointed to things. See that kind of bird up there, and that over there, and the guy from New York couldn't see anything. And he was amazed how much the guide could see. The guide could see all those different birds and insects and butterflies and all kinds of stuff. And the guy from New York, you know, just saw a lot of leaves. And I suppose probably if the opposite happened, if the guy from Costa Rica had come to New York City, probably the guy in New York probably knew how to see all kinds of details that the guy from Costa Rica hadn't been trained to see. Often, you know, we don't see so clearly in new situations. We don't see all the terrain or what's going on. There's often a lot more detail than meets the eye. But if we become used to or accustomed or been trained to be familiar with certain things, we can see a lot of detail, notice a lot of what's going on. Same thing goes on with the mind. The mind sometimes can feel like a jungle thicket, like a wild maze. But the more you can kind of see and understand what's really going on, the more you can kind of work wisely with it. You can be free of it. The more it's kind of just a massive thicket of stuff, the more it's going to be have a mind of its own, the more it's going to kind of sabotage us or take us hostage or lead us astray. So part of what insight meditation involves is beginning to learn to see some of the details of what's happening in the mind. So the element of investigation or curiosity is a very important part of this meditation practice. What is this? Kind of the basic question we always ask in this in our practice is, what is this? What is it? What's going on here? So one of the first things to begin to studying is what is it that makes it difficult for us to be present? What is it that takes us away from the present moment? So what were some of the things you found out? What were some of the things that took you away from the present moment during this last sitting?
Thinking about
Could you
what
wait
might...
for the
I was thinking about what I was involved in today and planning for some future activity related to it.
Uh-huh. So you were thinking about what happened today and planning the future about it, and your mind kept going there. And now the emotional tone or the quality of your mind thinking about it, what was that like?
It wasn't emotion charged. It was just
matter of fact.
Yeah.
But and energetically, was it a lot of strong impulse for it, or was it kind of just weak, kind of just floating off into it?
More floating, not a strong impulse, no.
Uh-huh. And did you notice whether it was, what do you say, was characterized by wanting something? A desire?
No, it was more trying to figure out the next step. It was my mind just planning what to do about what I experienced today.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. So someone else. Over here, if you maybe pass that over, please, the mic. It's our talking stick.
What I experienced was tiredness, just physically being tired. So it's hard to stay present.
Okay. So the tiredness kind of, how did that operate? How did it make it difficult for you to be present?
I could hear what you're saying, but there was this pull to just want to sleep.
Mm-hmm. So you felt that pull, and so the mind would... Would you periodically kind of surface from that and
yes.
notice? And then when you surfaced, what did it feel like, the tendrils of sleepiness? How did that feel like for you?
I didn't really know what was going on, sort of where I was. It was this continuous.
So you kind of woke up in a sense, but then you didn't know where you were, the feeling? Or
Well, just, right, I didn't know, I couldn't easily remember the moment before. Uh-huh. So there could have been a gap, a short gap, or a long gap.
Okay.
Or no gap, let's say.
Okay. Someone else?
I had kind of two things. One, for the last week or so, I've been getting this lump in my throat. And it's problematic up to the point where it's problematic if I'm trying to resist it. And it's kind of like being tickled, where someone could tickle you and you're just, you know, there's a point where you're not really resisting the tickling, you're just feeling it tickling. But as soon as you kind of clench a little bit, then it really tickles. And that's kind of the feeling I get in my throat, although it's more like a kind of a gagging kind of feeling. I don't know. I assume you just watch it. I have no idea. Maybe just in general, so things like that, any kind of sensation, you're just trying to track the sensation, not to explain it, not to find out what it's about, just
be present for it. Just be present for it. And that doesn't have to be a distraction from the present moment. That is the present moment.
That is, yeah.
But then while you're tracking something that's uncomfortable like that, is there some kind of thing that tends to pull you away? Some people would feel a lump and they start having doctor thoughts.
Because the pulling away is what makes it unpleasant then.
The pulling
it's
away.
It's just kind of there. It's, I guess, unpleasant, but it's not, it's not a problem. But as soon as you start to pull away from it, then it's...
So what prompts you to pull away? What kind of thoughts or what kind of reaction?
That the feeling is going to overwhelm me somehow. That there's a fear, I suppose.
So fear then keeps reappearing, and the fear pulls you out of the present moment, being
exactly.
present for something.
Right.
And that's a pattern.
Right.
Great. Thank you. Someone else?
I noticed several things, but three of them seem to be related. Anxiety, comparisons, and judgments.
So three things that are related.
And because while they're different and may have had different incidents, that is one or the other, I noticed one thing that sort of all three of them in some kind of nexus. It's like, I'm never going to learn how to do this. I'm not as good at this as other people. I'm hopeless. Will I ever learn to do this?
So there's doubt.
My mind keeps wandering. Why can't I just pay attention to my breath?
So
which, of course, takes me away from my breath.
Yeah. So a lot of doubt and a lot of anxiety and a lot of judgment, a lot of comparisons. And do you have? So how does that function? Can you talk a little bit more in detail about how it functions to take you away from the present moment? It doesn't have to be completely away. Sometimes what it does, it kind of makes a film over the present moment. So we're not really...
I just noticed that I've left the breath and I'm now in these other places.
So you leave the breath and you're in these other places. But you see how it pulls you out of the breath, or it happens just like that?
I don't know. I just become aware that I'm not with the breath anymore.
Uh-huh. And you're in those places.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, among others, but those three were the most interesting.
Uh-huh. Does any of you have the experience sometimes, though, of a different quality of presence? Like you're kind of there, but there's kind of a film of something? So that also keeps you from being fully present. You don't have to be completely checked out. You can just be kind of half there. So some more reports. It'd be nice to have me a couple of more before I talk. A little bit higher, please.
One of the sensations that I had was, as I was trying to focus on my breath, I actually was focusing on the fact that my belt was tighter than it probably should be to breathe in with my belly and breathe out. So I was kind of thinking about my breath, but at the same time, very acutely aware of, you know, the tightness around my waist. So.
Yeah, that's it. That's a new one. Sometimes there's these beautiful, you know, musical melodies. If you at least have it ring, you should have it kind of be more pleasant. Mechanical voice. It's the first time for everything. There you go. That's better. So, but the discomfort in your belly, the tight belt, for example, that in itself is not responsible for making it difficult for you to be present. That's just making it uncomfortable. It might make it difficult for you to be with the breath because it's pulling your attention. But then you can be very present for that. Mm-hmm. Unless you have judgments about that or aversion to it or reactions to it. Not being present means you're pulled away from it. You're lost from the present moment in some way. And this is an important point because it's very common for people to have a judgment. Oh, something uncomfortable is happening. And therefore, that uncomfortable thing is not really what's supposed to happen in meditation. So I'm not really present for what I'm supposed to be present for. But uncomfortable phenomena arising in the present moment is just as much something to be present for as anything else. Is it making some sense?
Yeah.
So you want to say anything more now? Or?
Well... I was trying to focus on my breath, but yeah, I realized I was in the present moment. But I had a lot of other things going through my mind.
A lot of what?
A lot of other things going through my mind. I don't know if that's working. It's working okay. But I recently started a new job, and I have certain perceptions, and I don't know if they're reality or just perceptions that I brought with me from experience elsewhere. And so I noticed that, you know, apparently I have a lot of fear going through my mind right now.
So anxiety, perhaps, or
anxiety
fear.
Anxiety and fear about, you know, are my perceptions real or not?
And does that pull you out of the present moment? Do you see how that operates to pull you out?
Well, it made it impossible for me to focus on breathing in and out.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, I guess in some ways it's like being in the present moment, but I wasn't focusing on what I wanted to focus on.
Okay, great, good. So maybe one more if we can have in the back there, and directly behind you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, to hold it close to your mouth, you'll hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I, you know, I experience pain, which I could be present with, but then it would loom really large, you know, which I guess I would prefer it not to.
But did the largeness of the pain make it difficult to be present for it?
Well, it's nothing but it, you know. That's all that's there.
Uh-huh. If that's all that's there, there's no problem.
Well, it feels like a problem.
Then something else is there. So then the question is, what else is there that's making it a problem? I've had tremendous pain that I've entered into with meditation and felt joy in the process of feeling it.
Okay. Perhaps that will happen sometime.
So the investigation for you, I think, would be to...
Well, I can get the pain into sensations.
Uh-huh.
You know, throbbing, icy, you know, that sort of thing. But it just I don't know what else to do with it. And you're saying don't do anything, but it's I do feel a lot of aversion toward it.
Okay, so and you have any sense how the aversion pulls you out of the present moment, pulls you out of being present for it, or somehow?
No, not really.
How does the aversion relate to your ability to be present for it, or stay there?
Well,
does it color your perception of the pain, or does it hinder it in any way, or?
I don't know. Something makes it get bigger. Uh-huh. So perhaps the aversion does, but it's also related to following my breath. So when I'm doing that, when I'm breathing in, when I'm breathing out, that increases it. So it makes me want to not breathe, which is counterintuitive.
Yeah. Well, the pain you're describing maybe needs a lot more investigation to understand. I don't want to give some kind of simple reply to it. But what I'm trying to get to here today is the mechanism of the ways that the things that the mind does that makes it difficult to stay present. And aversion is one of the things that often makes it difficult to stay present. Aversion can trigger the mind to go into thoughts and ideas and reactions, as opposed to just staying right there up against it. We pull away, we're pushing away. And so you can sometimes see the way in which aversion kind of puts a film over the directness of it, or we get caught up in thoughts of aversion. Or,
mm-hmm. And so you think it would be better just to stay with the experience and to not resist it?
If you haven't tried that yet, I would strongly recommend you try that. So, you want to say something? Okay. So what I'm trying to point to here by asking these questions and having you speak is that there's a range of things, a huge range of things that can happen as you're meditating that pull you out of the present moment or kind of put a cloud over your experience of the present moment. One of the things we need to do in meditation is to really understand how this works well. Now, it's very common for meditators to have some idea that either they're supposed to be fully present, enlightenedly present, gloriously present, completely present, and if they're not that way, they're a failure. And something terrible is going on in their meditation, they're not a good meditator, and you know, and the fact that they have something that gets in the way that makes it difficult to be present, well, they're just a meditative anomaly. Everyone else in the hall, I'm sure, is half the way to samadhi, you know, but you're just bumbling along. And the things that make it difficult to be present, sometimes people will reject it, they'll be angry towards it, they'll push it away, they'll deny it, they'll judge themselves negatively because of it. It's a relatively common phenomenon, something like that.